The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my erudite co-host, Rick Hess. Welcome, Rick.
Hello, Michael.
Rick, looks like Washington is going to have a new mayor, Adrian Fenty. He is 35 years old, has a shaved head, competes in triathlons, I like that, and my sources have spotted him wearing a fedora, kind of like you. Any thoughts on Mr. Fenty?
35 and a shaved head. Man, this guy could be doing Ivory Soap commercials instead of being mayor. I like it.
Ivory Soap commercials. That's right. It's going to be focusing on No Child Left Behind these days too, right? They have a new No Child Left Behind commercial where they say Ivory Soap as pure as No Child Left Behind.
Yes. And I also was thinking that he's got that gentle, soft-looking head. When you see Fenty on TV, a lot of times you just want to reach out and stroke the screen. It just looks so soft and well-maintained.
Yeah. You know, now that you think about it, yeah, I would like to stroke his head.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you have anything to say about Adrian Fenty, shoot us a line at letters@excellence.net. We would love to hear from you. Okay, we're going to get going, Rick, shall we?
Let's do it.
We're going to start, of course, with our game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we'll have our interview, which is a real hoot this week. And finally, our weird correspondent, Liam, will serve up a dose of education news of the weird, just like he does every week. Hopefully this time it'll be truly weird. See how he does on that front. Okay. Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics for 90 seconds each. Here's topic number one, Rick. Back to Adrian Fenty. He has been one of DC's foremost opponents of vouchers and one of its foremost proponents of pouring millions of dollars into failing schools. Rick, is Fenty going to screw up education reform in the nation's capital?
Oof. Well, it's probably tough to screw up education reform. It's kind of like screwing up the Detroit Lions. You know, we're not dealing with the lot on the ball to begin with. I don't know. I mean, Fenty says he's going to be a hands-on mayor. I'm not sure what that means exactly. And all accounts have the guy
energetic. It means that you can put your hand on his head. Establish that.
And all accounts have the guy energetic as a Dickens. So, you know, compared to Anthony Williams, who's only in D.C. one weekend a month, hell, maybe Fenty will be a step up.
Rick, you said absolutely nothing in that statement, but let's get into the topic, all right? Look, okay, he's been very clear that he was against the voucher program that was passed by Congress a few years ago. He used to be somewhat opposed to charter schools, but in recent years he's been moving more towards a pro-charter school position. You know, people could ask, look, does it matter? Does the mayor of D.C. have much say over these policies anyway? But, you know, there are a lot of things that they can do behind the scenes to help charter schools or private schools or to hinder them. Mayor Williams was a big force in getting the voucher program to D.C. and in supporting charter schools. So I think there's some cause for concern. And need I remind you that Washington, D.C., not only the nation's capital, but also probably the leading city for school choice today.
Well, Fenty wants D.C. to be a shining city on a hill. So that can only be a good thing, right?
It can only be a good thing. He also was very clear in his big speech the other night when he won that he wants to be a mayor for all of D.C. Let's hope that includes kids in charter schools and getting vouchers.
Oof.
Okay.
Boy, you are pushing the agenda. I like that.
That's right. What's topic number two, Rick?
Are we on?
And is your comment mean, you mean I made points, you know, because it's supposed to be a debate?
No.
Substance here, Rick.
You know what? I don't think I really picked up on the buzzer. I think my headphones were insufficiently tight. Okay. And I don't think I even realized we were in and out. Okay. Anyway, Michael, topic two. Looks like your little buddies, the bureaucratic folk over at the Department of Education, are waving the big old white flag on highly qualified teachers. Another feckless surrender to the states for the gang over there, Mike, or a blessing in disguise?
Well, let me explain, first of all, what happened. Right. In the law, if you're a veteran teacher, in order to demonstrate subject matter competence, you can take a test, you can have a major in the field, or those people over in Congress created this thing called HOUSE, right? High Objective Uniform State Standard of Evaluation, blah, blah, blah. This is basically a portfolio, and it's basically a huge loophole that states have driven a truck through.
Or you can just say they built a house.
They built a house, and now they're tearing it down. Well, earlier this summer, the secretary, Spellings that is, said that states had to get rid of the house option, that from now on, because the deadline has passed for getting all teachers to be highly qualified, from now on, teachers have got to pass a test or have a major in the field to show that they're highly qualified. This week, she backed off that and now will allow states to continue to have this loophole.
Now, explain to a listener, Mike, how is it possible that the secretary could overrule congressional language. How's that work?
Well, the question was this. There was a lot of confusion about what was supposed to happen after 2005, 2006, which was the deadline for getting all teachers to be highly qualified. Now that that deadline has passed, the question is, okay, every year there's going to be new teachers that have to become highly qualified. And how are they going to go about doing that? Do they have to go back and take a test, or can they use this loophole? So there was a little bit of question within the law about whether or not what Congress intended. So there's been a big fight over
that. Now, why did Spellings change her mind?
Well, I think she changed her mind because I think the lawyers in the Department of Education convinced her that she didn't have the authority to do the policy she had before.
Real quick, good thing or bad thing?
You know, it's mostly a bad thing, except I will say, silver lining, it might be good for charter schools to provide them a little more flexibility and a little less headache in this area.
Now, how is that more flexibility, Mike, when you lose house?
That
Real
is
quick,
the buzz.
That's the
buzz.
Question.
That's the buzz.
How is that more flexibility,
all right,
sir?
The more flexibility. No, what I'm saying is she kept house. That's the point.
Oh, so the reversal might be good for charters.
No, keeping house is good for
keeping
charters.
Keeping house. Well, that's a reversal of
keeping
the policy.
Keeping house. You get it?
Keeping house.
I love
I like
all the
it.
House cliches, huh?
Call it good housekeeping.
Good housekeeping. Okay, our final topic, Rick.
Oh, that was a very informative exchange, Mike.
Thank you.
Nicely
well,
done.
Once again, I had things to say about it, but I'm not sure that you did.
I was like a masterful interviewer.
That actually
I
you
drew
were.
The knowledge out of you.
All right. Then I want to hear your opinions on this topic this time. Higher education. New report card out last week, blasted the states for college affordability, lots of other things. But one point they made was that other countries are really catching up and even starting to pass us by when it comes to their higher education systems. What do you think? Is this all a bunch of phooey?
Well, I mean, I think it's never been entirely clear that higher education was as good as a lot of folks, particularly in the choice debate, claim it is. One of the you know, frequently used tropes in the choice debates is American higher education is filled with markets and choice, and therefore it's outstanding. Fact is, there's more than 4,000 colleges and universities in the U.S. You're hard-pressed to say that more than 300 or 400 of those are really outstanding. Well, that's about 8 or 10%. That's about the same percentage, I would argue, as are really good of K-12 schools. So I think there's always been real ambiguity about how good American higher education is on average and how it stacks up internationally. There's a lot of reason international students want to come to the U.S. and particularly to our flagship institutions that don't speak to policy. So bottom line here, I think a lot of the triumphalism has often been overstated. And I think the alarmism here in the NC report, in the NC blah, blah, blah report is probably overstated as well.
But can you think of any reasons why we might believe that our own higher education system is getting worse?
I mean, there's a lot of different cross currents moving back and forth. I think it's less a concern about our system getting worse necessarily, except on affordability. I think it's more a concern about nations like China and India making unprecedented investments and starting to move up.
So are you implying that our colleges are getting less affordable? You buy into that?
No. But they're certainly more expensive. Affordability is, you know, a complicated kind of complicated question.
And don't you have a conference coming out on that point?
I do indeed. We do. Although that's only assuming the folks don't have the cash they need. How do you get it?
Okay. All right, Rick. Well, that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. We're now going to turn to our interview, which is truly scrumptious this week. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Andy Smerick, the Chief of Staff at the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, who is running this year for the Maryland House of Delegates. He's going to tell us about that experience. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you and both of your listeners.
That's right. Both of our listeners. Now, you know, there are many people out there listening in secret, just like we understand that you do sometimes.
That's right.
To the show.
I listen.
He listens.
Occasionally.
Is that an endorsement? Well, Andy, this is an exciting week for you. You won on Tuesday your primary race in the House of Delegates, and now you're heading towards the general election.
Correct. A sprint now 53 days until Election Day.
Very good. Well, this is very exciting. Well, you know, people have pointed out that you and a woman, Ember...
Reichgott Young.
Right. Thank you. I always have a hard time with her complicated last name, are among the education reformers who have thrown their hat into the ring, actually running for office this year. Ember, unfortunately, lost her Democratic primary in Minnesota. That was for the U.S. Congress.
U.S. Congress.
Right? But you won your race. Tell me, you know, do you think it's important for education reformers to get involved like this in the political process?
Yeah, it couldn't be more important when you think about it. In a certain sense, reformers have pushed the envelope as far as they could in the nonprofit sector, I think, and in research. But at the end of the day, these big decisions are made by governors, are made by state legislators, are made by school board members. And the only way you get inside is by being elected. So the time came.
Very good. Now, what's tricky, though, is, you know, in a district like yours, it's a interesting district, mm-hmm. part rural, part suburban, very affluent, and then includes the city of Annapolis, which right. is, like many cities, has many poor and urban areas.
Exactly.
You know, in a district like that, you know, do charter schools sell?
Yes and no, depending on where and when. For example, I helped start a KIPP school, a charter school in the city of Annapolis, and with low-income families who care desperately about the future of their kids and low-performing schools, of course they're happy with it. But if you're in rural areas or if you're in the leafy suburbs, which tend to be more conservative, you know, they have a tendency to think that all schools really need are more spending, smaller class sizes, and so forth. So it can be a good and easy sales job in some places and more difficult other places.
Okay. And it was interesting, and we understand that in Ember's race, the teachers union at the last minute did a mailing attacking her for being a charter supporter.
Yeah, and which is really interesting because Minnesota, she was the author of the first charter school law in America, and Minnesota's had charters now for more than 15 years. You would have thought by now that it would become less of a political issue, but it hasn't been. And we don't know how much to attribute her loss to that, but the teachers union came out against her and used the charters against her.
Okay. So what do you think? You've got the sprint ahead of you, 53 more days.
Yeah.
So what role is education going to play then in your campaign?
Very, very big. In my district, and I think probably in most districts, voters say that education is the most important issue. But then when you get down to the details, that's where it becomes more interesting. What do people actually mean when they say that education is the most important issue to them? But it's what drives me. It's what makes me passionate about running for public office. There are other issues, too, that drive voters in my district. But it's going to be the first thing I talk about wherever I go.
Good. Well, thanks for being on the show. And as an education reformer, we're certainly wishing you good luck in November.
Well, I appreciate it. And it was a lot of fun. Thanks. Good.
Well, Rick, like I said, scrumptious lesson.
Spot on, Petrilli.
Okay. It's time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, why are your eyes all red? And what's with the jumbo-sized bag of Funyuns?
Oh, hey, Mike. What's up, Rick? I'm just eating some Funyuns. They're so good. It's part of a new performance incentive plan I made for myself, modeled after that of perspicacious Pennsylvania resident Amanda Lynn Livelsberger.
Is that a real name?
Yes. Livelsberger, in order to get her 13-year-old son to do his homework, decided to use marijuana, a.k.a. Mary Jane, as an incentive. Apparently, she's been smoking the ganja with her son since he turned 11, usually as a reward for finishing his homework. Amanda Livelsberger could spend up to 17 years in prison and pay up to $36,000 for her crime. It's also possible, though not certain, that her driver's license will be suspended for 6 months. The Public Opinion, the Chambersburg, Pennsylvania newspaper, wrote an editorial about the situation in their piece titled, quote, "Our View. Mother, son, need help." The astute editorialist of Chambersburg wrote, quote, "While incentives can help to motivate people, one area mother took the wrong approach," unquote. Well put, Public Opinion. Thank you for always pointing us in the right direction. Rick, what type of performance incentive programs do they have for you guys at AEI?
Dude, we could be so much more productive. Now, there's a crime. What exactly is the crime she committed? I'm still confused.
It was that part about smoking weed with her son.
That's 17 years in prison for a little bit of J?
Same thing as Socrates, I think, right? Corrupting the youth.
Rick, you haven't thought about having children, have you?
In fact, there was a major new study just released in one of the medical journals that hepatitis C or hepatitis B or one of the lettered hepatitises, that people who were smoking weed regularly during the 6 months of therapy, much higher recovery rate. This was like page 2 or 3 of the Washington Post the other day.
And that's relevant to the story. How?
Because weed can be a fine thing, and I think it's pretty clever that she's motivating with it. And what we don't see anything about here is how good her son was doing in school.
Well,
I'll bet he was kicking it.
There's a part I didn't mention. The child's father is actually in prison for dealing crack cocaine.
Well, I'm not saying you give kids crack, but let's not be Neanderthals here.
But it's a slippery slope there, Rick, now, isn't it?
It's not really, man.
All right. Well, you can find Rick Hess on the Legalizing Marijuana podcast on another channel coming to you soon. But for us, that is all the time we've got. Thank you, Liam.
Liam, that was a good one. And that name, that's hard to believe that name was real.
Very good. Okay. Well, that is all the time we have. In fact, Checker Finn is here telling us that Rick and I are late for a meeting. So we are off. Don't forget to read the original Gadfly at excellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Kess. I feel like my dad just
And I'm Mike Petrilli. We're both in trouble. We'll see you next week.